but there'll be no Wendell Salad jokes with this particular from this particular man. But I reckon, forget the bad 80s rock, forget the punk rock, go a bit of solid disco then, Steve.
Welcome to episode 8 of White Line Fever, and I'm here with the development manager for the Caribbean, representing the European Rugby League Federation. It's Romeo Monteith. Romeo, we're here in Philadelphia, and by the time the listeners hear this, your first game of the World Cup qualifiers will have been played against South Africa. How are the boys looking?
Well, right now the team is looking very well. The boys have been training for, you know, the past couple of weeks, and they're gelling very well together. Both the boys from the island and the boys from the UK. So, you know, we're feeling confident about tomorrow. It's going to be a tough game. But, you know, we do expect the boys to go out there and give it their best shot, and then we'll see what the results are like.
What are some of the players that you've got in the team, Romeo, that, you know, your average rugby league fan might be aware of? We heard Leon Price might have come, but he hasn't come, has he?
Right. Leon is not a part of the team. As it is known, there are players from the island, players like Romain, Gully Campbell, and Tyrone Rowe, who you know, themselves are making a reputation in the international game. From the UK, Carl Price is here. You know, he's with Wigan, was on loan with Harlequins this year. Lamont Bryan, who is ever present, he's here again. Paul White, playing at Halifax. Formerly one of the fastest guys in Super League, Wayne Price, Hunslet Hawks, another guy who was in Super League who is probably well known, Jermaine Killery, playing out of Keighley, Jamel Coleman, formerly of London Scholars, now with Keighley as well. So, you know, quite a few other boys playing some good rugby at Championship level or at Championship One, a few guys in there with Super League experience. So it's a very balanced squad for a World Cup qualification. We need the best team to go out on the park, and we have tried our best to recruit the highest quality players that are available to Jamaica.
What's happening on the domestic? It was only a year ago that you won your first game at international level, so the game's come a long way in Jamaica, hasn't it? What's happening at domestic level?
Well, as I've always said to folks around the world, that, I mean, as long as there's a ball on a field, I mean, Jamaicans will play rugby league. You know, we started in 2005 in terms of playing the game, and we have definitely come a far way since then. Currently, we're up to 5 university teams playing in their own championship. In 2011, we had 9 club teams who entered the club championship. You know, due to financial difficulties, though, I mean, about half of those didn't finish the season, but at least, you know, there were 9 clubs initially to start, which is remarkable after only 7 years. At the high school level, we had 10 high schools who participated in the rugby league in 2010. And for the school year 2011 to 2012, we have 8 high schools in the capital and another 4 high schools in the western side of the island who are interested in playing the sport. So definitely numbers are increasing. We're up to around 500 players right now across all levels. The women are chomping at my feet because they want to play as well. Mm. So definitely a lot of rugby league is there to be played on the island, and it's just a matter of the association being in a position to put tournaments on and to put competitions on. Mm. Because people will play.
There's a club called the Hurricanes, and the intention is to enter a team in the American League. I mean, how much has the split in the American League hurt those plans? Has it complicated the issue at all?
Well, the Hurricanes is an idea that is being supported by Dane Campbell. At the Noosa Pirates, coach of the Noosa Pirates. Dane has been really good to us. And it's an opportunity to really lift the standard of the local boys a bit more by having them play in a competition that is based somewhere in North America. Of course, you know, Canada is on the radar right now. Canada, they're doing very well. Currently have the AMNRL and the USARL, I think it is, in the States. Basically, it comes down to a business decision that Dane and his management team will make when the time comes. By that time, who knows, maybe both organizations will have come back together. Who knows, maybe something can happen in Canada. So really and truly, it depends on the competition or the organization that will work along with us and where there's the best opportunity to really have the boys play outside of the island. So I wouldn't really say it has hurt the chances of the Hurricanes. I think it just makes it more interesting. But at the end of the day, you know, I mean, why can't we all just get along? That's what we want. You know?
The last question, what are the prospects of sending players to overseas clubs in the meantime? There's been talk about it, hasn't there? But there's some of the technicalities and formalities are quite difficult.
Yes, really and truly, ultimately, that is the ambition of most rugby league players around the world. You know, once you want to get to a certain standard, you definitely want to see yourself in some of the best competitions in the world. And at the moment, those are really in the UK and in Australia. Some clubs are definitely interested in some of our local boys. You know, we have been inquiring about the requirements, and right now, in your country, you need to, for example, for the UK, you need to be in the top 17 ranked countries in the world to be able to apply for a work visa right now. You know, I don't know if there are any special considerations that can be made, because, you know, the ranking is going to be changed every month, really and truly. So definitely there's some interest here for the boys, and, you know, we hope that a couple of the guys will get the opportunity if they can get the work visas. That's a critical thing.
Now, Romeo, we play music on this program. It would be a cliche if I tried to pull out some reggae. Would that be a cliche or not?
You should run some Bob Marley, man, or, you know, or some Buju Banton, you know, and let the fans have a airy time. One look.
I'll try and find the thing in my library that is closest to reggae. Thanks for being on the program. Good luck in the World Cup qualifiers.
Yeah, thanks very much for the time.
Oh! Tommy from the Casanovas, and you're on White Line Fever.
Welcome back to the program. I've actually done some pretty cool stuff in the last week and a half. Last week's episode, we spoke to Kevin Iroh from the Cook Islands Rugby League. I was in the Cook Islands. After that, and I only mentioned it very briefly, went to Cabo San Lucas for Sammy Hagar's annual birthday bash. It was great. The first night, an unannounced set from Chickenfoot, who are absolutely outstanding. If you listen to the show every week, you know how much we love them. And then the second night was a Sammy Hagar solo show with Vinnie Paul sitting in on the drums, Michael Anthony there again, some other guests. So because I just neglected to mention any of it last week, here's a little burst of Sammy doing the Van Halen classic Finish What You Started on night two. They actually convinced the council to block off the street, and Sammy and guests played on a stage in the street outside the Cabo Arbo. Now, straight from Mexico to Miami for the Kiss Cruise, which a lot of people didn't know was on, but since it finished, it's been receiving a fair bit of publicity online if you get on the rock websites, and that's because it was pretty damn fantastic. Now, it started with an acoustic show on deck as the Carnival Destiny pulled out of dock. Now, before this song, Paul Stanley asked if there were any Australians in the audience, and there were 43, apparently. Then he asked if there were any Kiwis, and there was dead silence. But the reason he asked is because this song was only a hit in those countries. Interesting things for Kiss fans was after this acoustic set, which was played without any makeup, when the band did Q&As. Now, all the questions were vetted. They were pre-approved. And at first, they started off like what we call in journalism Dorothy Dix's, pretty soft balls. But some interesting ones did come up. So let's try and have a few highlights from the Kiss Q&A on the Sail Away show on the Kiss Cruise.
We love those songs. Whenever we hear about a band that doesn't want to play those songs that made them famous, it's so weird to us because we celebrate all those songs. Those songs mean the world to us because they were the ticket that got us to where we are. And when we play them, we play them as though it's the first night. We love those songs. There's nothing more disrespectful than a band that gets bored with their material and suddenly comes out and plays a reggae version of the song because they're bored. We go on stage every night to play those songs exactly the way we wrote them, exactly the way they should sound, and give them the respect they deserve because those songs have been great to us.
We've never done this before. I will tell you, we're going to tell this to our grandchildren. This is so cool. This is a first for us. Thank you for making it so memorable for us.
And you're memorable in a lifetime. Gene's going to call his grandchildren tomorrow. Just kidding.
We got Marina here. Marina is from Germany.
Marina, sprechen Sie Deutsch? Ein bisschen?
Yes.
Hochdeutsch oder?
Hochdeutsch.
Hochdeutsch.
Berlin.
Was? Ah, Berlin.
Yes.
Ich bin ein Berliner.
If you guys get your Kiss Dakota rings out. And she wants me to read her question for you. Did you know that until 1989 it was illegal to be a Kiss fan in Germany?
East Germany.
We come from this time and are still here supporting you today after all the persecution.
Yeah!
You can't stop rock and roll and you can't stop Kiss.
If you were in possession of music or merchandise from Kiss and you were caught, you would be politically persecuted. Now the wall is gone. It is a dream to meet you in person. Thank you.
By the way, none of that is an exaggeration. I personally, there's a limo driver, there's a guy who drives me in a town car in L.A. He's from Kiev in Russia. The guy spent 18 months in jail for this heinous crime. He had Destroyer. He was put in jail because we're so dangerous to the world. How about this? Communism lost. We win!
Gene, why are you so quiet all of a sudden?
Well, I just work here.
You never shut up. Go ahead, talk.
He's married now. He's not allowed to talk.
We have to ask Shannon if he can answer that question.
Shannon, what do you think?
I think around the time of Look It Up, right around Creatures, I thought we were making a great album, and I thought we'd really run maybe a miscourse. I think what we had done is we felt that when the band continued and all the original guys weren't there, we should come up with more characters. And, you know, the truth was, what we've always been missing until we put everything back together was those four images that are known worldwide. Some people may have an issue with that, and I say, you're welcome to your opinion, go fuck yourself.
But, oh, I'm so glad I can curse now. Thank you.
But truth be told, you know, what happened was, you know, we had become a menagerie from having four characters. All of a sudden, there was Caterpillar Man, Snail Boy. It really reached a point where it was losing the essence of what this band was always supposed to be about.
Okay, there's actually more good stuff there than I thought. So we'll take a song. And the other band that was on the Kiss Cruise 2011, and by the way, the news from the cruise is that Paul Stanley announced during one of the makeup shows, which was indoors, there was two of them, that they will definitely be back next year. But the other band that you would definitely have heard of on the cruise was Skid Row. Here's their cover of Kiss's Come On and Love Me.
In a music magazine, then she met me, said she can't make.
probably going to be 5 minutes, but go ahead.
Gene, what kind of watch is he wearing?
I got a question for Gene. If you like, I ask you in German.
Swiss Deutsch?
No, German.
Hochdeutsch?
Ja.
Okay.
Wie fühlt es sich an, verheiratet zu sein?
What are you doing later?
How does it feel to be married?
How does it feel to be married?
He didn't quite put it that way. It sounds more formal. But I will tell you something. Again, in all honesty, I like to joke around stuff like that. Any girl who would wait for an asshole like me for 28 years, and give me two beautiful children. And Gene Simmons' Family Jewels is now filmed in season 8.
Check me out, season 6. I came to Gene's house.
In all seriousness, I love Shannon Tweet and I do as well. Thank you very much.
She wants to know if Kiss can send our kids to Disney. As the thousands of dollars we would have had for that vacation, I spent following you guys around North America.
How many kids do you have?
Two kids.
Where are you going from?
Ontario. I will personally send both of your kids and you to Disney.
We've got Vance. Vance, where are you from?
Cincinnati, Ohio.
Vance wants to know if we can send his kids to Europe. Who needs a new car?
This is for Paul. Does the rose tattoo on your shoulder stand for somebody specific?
It was the chief. I heard that.
Does the rose tattoo stand for anything besides don't get drunk in Hoboken?
Hey, Chief. Come on, you're a big guy. Say it in the microphone.
Gene!
No, it's not true. Come on.
She says it's sexy. Thank you. I'm sexy.
Yes,
Chief! You say I'm sexy, he says I'm gay. You know what I mean?
Next up, we have Liron. And Liron, where are you from?
Israel.
From Israel. And what is your question?
My question is...
Hello, Father.
If you could choose one to open for you again, who would it be? And who were your favorite opening acts?
AC/DC.
AC/DC is, you know, from the days that they were opening and Bond was still in the band, AC/DC has always stood their ground. They've never changed. They've never given way to fads. AC/DC.
How long does it take you to put on your makeup and your outfits for your shows?
Jane? It takes me the longest. It takes me 2 hours.
More. Because you never shut up. Eric likes to disco dance and do lap dances on Gene.
Only on Gene.
Only on Gene.
Thank God.
And Gene never says no.
Hey, I got to entertain him.
I think Gene likes it.
Okay, I hope you enjoyed that. As far as I know, not available anywhere else. Didn't break any laws by putting it in the podcast. We're about to find out, I suppose. Normal housekeeping, stevemascott.com for all the rugby league news and a bit of rock and roll as well. Whitelinefever.ning.com where there's the videos for the songs in today's broadcast, and also there's a stevemascott.com Facebook page and a lot of our cool stuff been going up there in the last week with me being on the road and back going to a few shows as well. A lot of rugby league, going to rugby league in the Cook Islands, rugby league in Philadelphia, rugby league in Avignon, and rugby league in Belgrade, all before the Four Nations start. So anyway, now the next song is Anthrax doing a Kiss song, and then just so happens that after that we've got Anthrax talking about Kiss. And that's the end of the show. It's the last you'll hear from me. See you next week.
takes off her clothes. I know she's going down, going. Everybody knows she's so good.
Okay, we're back with Scott and Rob from Anthrax. Now, this is the newsy part of the program where you fill us in on all the what your plans are, touring plans, all that sort of stuff. What's happening?
We start touring this record soon. U.S. tour starts October 14th. We have Testament and Death Angel out opening for us. After that tour, we go to Japan and Indonesia. We'll break for the new year, and then we basically plan to be on tour probably most of next year. I can't tell you exactly when we're coming to Australia yet, but we're coming to Australia.
And what is the situation with videos these days? I mean, do you sort of know when something comes out, we're going to do two videos or three videos, or is it just a matter of how successful the songs are? How does it work?
It's kind of funny that you mentioned that, because literally today I got an email from the head of our label in the States saying it's time to start thinking about a video.
Really?
Yeah. Literally Missy emailed me this morning. Because I wrote her just about what's going on at radio, and at home, The Devil You Know is doing really well at radio at home, and it's growing and growing. It keeps getting bigger, and she said it's time to start thinking about a video. So literally those conversations started today. We had no intention of making a video, because these days it's kind of like...
No outlet for it.
Yeah, it just goes on YouTube. Yeah, that's exactly all it is now. It's not like there's places that play this stuff anymore. So to spend that much money on something, we just find... there's better ways to market your band with that money than making a music video. But now the label is telling us we want one. They're going to come up with a budget for it, so we'll make one, you know, if there's going to be a budget.
How does touring now sort of differ to the 80s? I mean, as far as, I don't know, how much money you can make out of it, or what the routine is, or, you know, what the promoters are like. I mean, is it changed that much?
Not really. Touring is really, considering no one buys records anymore, or, you know, most people don't buy records anymore. Touring, you know, has always been for us, it's just what we do. We're a working man's band. We're very blue collar in that aspect. I think one of the main reasons why we're still doing this is because we've been such a great live band our whole career. And it's something we take a lot of pride in. And just being able to go out there and do that and have people come to your show and really just entertain the fuck out of them for 2 hours and let people, you know, just see what it's all about live. It's just as important as making records, as far as I'm concerned, for Anthrax.
What's your highest aspiration for this record? How far do you think it can go? If, in a dream, what would you like?
The limit. Yeah. You know, it's like, I think we're going to try to take it as far as we can go, you know. Who knows? The sky's definitely the limit.
How big can a metal record be now? Like, what?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, after...
What's crazy is, though, even Metallica, now, if a Metallica new record comes out in the States, it'll still sell a million, which is incredible, because these days to sell a million records, that's like equal to selling 6 million or 7 million, you know, 10 years ago. So, to me, that's how big a metal record could be, if, like, in the States anyway. There's still that opportunity where if something really connects, you could sell a million records, which these days is massive.
Are you excited about the new Kiss record?
No.
How come?
I haven't bought a Kiss record since the solo albums in 1978. My window of Kiss is from like 74 to 78. And that's about as far as it goes.
Okay. On that note, thanks for joining us, guys. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having us, man.
Cheers.